Hi, you are listening to Record of Change. My name is Matthias and I'm your host for this episode. In today's episode, we'll hear Joaquin from Santiago de Chile. Joaquin and I met around 10 years ago in the Chilean capital, and since then I remember him as a politically very sensitive and active person. Up until today, Chilean society is digesting its time under the military dictatorship of Pinochet. The scars in society are still deep and the societal division remained big. Given this background, Joaquin will share with us how the Chileans have dealt not only with the huge impact of the pandemic, but also with the political upheaval that started already in 2019 and recently seems to overcome a huge, heavy legacy. But before we dive into South America, if in previous seasons you have listened to our guest Fida from Gaza City and were wondering how she is, luckily she is okay given the circumstances. Now, let's listen to today's guest.
My name is Joaquin Vázquez. I come from Chile, from the southernmost city in Chile, Punta Arenas, which is right at the Magellan Strait. I have been living in Santiago for more than 10 years. I'm a lawyer, and I'm studying a master's degree in tax law.
And what is your personal COVID story? How did you experience the pandemic until now?
Our lockdown started at the end of March last year, and I was suspended from my job right as the lockdown started, and this suspension kept going until June. So I spent like more than 3 months doing absolutely nothing, and I hardly left my home. I was living alone back then. I had recently broken up with my girlfriend, and so I was left alone at my apartment with my two cats. And I was starting the master's degree at that time, so I tried to use my time to study, but it was pretty hard, actually. Like the isolation and the whole uncertainty. Before there was even the possibility of a vaccine, I thought that the lockdown would last until the end of the year. But then around September, the lockdown ended and we could go out and, I don't know, go drink a beer, but with some restrictions. It was a period of serious political upheaval in Chile. There was a poll now just yesterday. There was an election. And so everything from the pandemic, the politics, the social changes, the social unrest because of the pandemic, and the mistakes made by the government, like everything mixed together. So it was a very intense time.
Can you describe what was the lockdown like? What were the restrictions? Were you allowed to go out? Were you allowed to? Were not allowed?
At first, for the first 3 or 4 months, we were allowed to go out, but we had to ask for a permission, which we did at the web page of the police. And you could only ask for two permits per week, and each permit lasted for 2 or 3 hours. At first, 2 and then 3 hours. And so we had to time our expeditions outside really well. So, for example, I had to go to the supermarket once per week and I had to be really ready. And most of the time I'm really forgetful, so it was not ideal. I still went out sometimes. I went out to a neighbor's place, just to be in contact with other people, because most of the time I just didn't speak words to another human. Like I talked to my cats and nothing else.
And did the virus really hit Chile? Like, how much was Chile affected by the pandemic?
It was really affected. My mom and several aunts and uncles and my brother are all doctors. And most of them work at public hospitals. And they were saying that the emergency rooms and all the respirators were completely full. They had to empty lots of the beds in the hospital, like send people home that were sick so they could make space for the COVID patients. So it's been like one of the worst cases of COVID management in Latin America, which is saying a lot. It spread all over the country, but most of the cases were concentrated here in Santiago. Mostly because when the restrictions started loosening up, people had to go to work, and most people work downtown near the center of the city, but live like 1 or 2 hours away from the center. So most of them had to take public transportation, which was a hotbed for infections. And also lots of workplaces didn't have any security measures. And because of the lack of government help, lots of people either lost their jobs or people who had informal jobs couldn't work. So for the working class, it was much more serious than for the non-working class.
Was there anything like a governmentally run or provided relief fund to people who lost their jobs, who lost their business?
Yes, but it was pretty lacking. So, for example, the government gave a monthly fund to the poorest 20% of the country of like 80 euros. And it gave a helping fund of about, I don't know, 600 euros or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, around 600 euros, which it gave one time and never again. So most of the people like hardly had anything to eat. Like people organized in what we call ollas comunes, which is like common pots, in which lots of people got together and cooked at a common pot for the whole neighborhood. And that was the way most people survived during the first months of the pandemic. Mm. And so, yeah, that led to a lot of political change. The right-wing government refused to give more help, and the left-wing, which was the majority in the parliament, had to force the government to release funds. And the government tried to resist it, which made it even more unpopular.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you just gave the numbers of 600 euros, I do remember that, especially in Santiago, living costs are almost equal to European standards, right? Like expenses that you have for rent, for groceries.
Yes.
I was wondering how did it hit, and how did it hit this inequality of there is this rich center around Santiago and people are living a life on standards like in the global north countries, but then how would the pandemic hit those areas that are much less resourced?
Yeah, well, it hit pretty hard. Like, we're a third world country. Like in Santiago and in some cities, you can't see it because there's a huge abyss between the rich and the poor. I mean, there's been studies that show that the medium wage in some of the municipalities is about as low as in some of the poor countries in Africa, for example. Mm. So people, like a lot of people have nothing, have no property, no health, no education, There's a lot of people that are completely excluded from participating in society. Most of the deaths came from the poor neighborhoods where people, I know, where there are two or three families living together, like the parents with their children and their children's children. And so because there were so many people together, there was no health precautions. And the poorest neighborhoods were the ones where the pandemic hit hardest. The health minister publicly said in an interview, "Oh, I didn't know that people lived so crammed together."
Holy.
Which was a sign for most people, like, oh, like, this is a rich person who has no idea how normal people live. But also there was no doubt that people, like, the poorest neighborhoods were getting more cases, because Santiago is very segregated. And so there are, like, a very uniformly distributed social classes. Like, you have all the more affluent people living at the east of the city. At the center, there's, like, sort of the middle class. And in the periphery, it's whole, like, working class. And so it was very easy to pinpoint where the cases came from.
So now, looking back, it's been more than a year now. How would you describe your emotional ride through this year?
I would say I went a little bit insane. Because also, since October 2019... there's been a lot of political upheaval in the country. There were many months of huge street protests, and those continued during the first months of 2020. And so we got news all the time of the government violently stopping the protests. And it felt so unfair and impossible to change. And when we heard, like, the people were hungry and didn't have anything to eat because of the government, that didn't help anyone's emotional state. Like, I was uncertain, scared, sad, and angry, like, all the time. So, yeah, that was pretty much my stay during the first months, like, until August or September. And then in October, we had a huge poll to decide if we were going to draft a new constitution. And the option to draft a new constitution won by a huge margin. And that was a dream like everyone has had for more than 30 years. So it was really a dream come true. So then the fear and anger were mixed with hope and happiness. So it was a very, it was a whirlwind of feelings and emotions.
It came together with the Chilean spring then. So how was your summertime?
I actually had a great time. I could go out. I started a new job. I could go and visit my parents at the beach in Viña del Mar. I could see friends. And so, yeah, it was a period of opening up and enjoying life. So it was a really good summer. And for most of the people, like, everyone, you could see in the news that everyone was going to the beach. Everyone was going to bars and things like that with some restrictions, but that led to a huge outbreak in February and March. So at the end of March, we started another lockdown, and we've been in lockdown since then. So it's been 2 months of this new lockdown.
Oh, you're in lockdown again. So do you have to apply again for at the police station for leaving your house?
Yes. Because of my job, I can go out more freely. But for example, during the weekends, I have one permit per weekend.
Wow. And then I've been reading, like, beginning of the year, that Chile was one of the fastest countries in the world with the vaccination rollout. How was this accepted and how is it going right now?
I would say that people have received the vaccination process with a lot of positivity and optimism. Like, about half the population has already gotten the vaccine. And yes, it's been pretty fast. Both the government and the local hospitals and health centers have stepped up to the challenge and done a really good work. So I hope we're done soon. I got my first shot today, an hour ago.
Ah, how do you feel so far? Any side effects?
Not yet.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Now, from this time, which we all relate much more to negativity, is there anything positive that you already learned? Would you say, like, oh, this is a positive takeaway?
Don't think I really got a huge takeaway from this. I could take a lot of classes in my master's degree, so I will end it earlier. But beyond that, I think I just focused on surviving, and that was enough. And then when the restrictions started loosening up, I just felt so free and I could return to my former life.
Mm. And then I guess there must have been a lot of anxiety that you have many family members working in medical care, so they maybe have been more close to the threat.
Yes, it was a constant fear. My mom got COVID, but she didn't get any strong symptoms. And other aunts, uncles, and cousins also got it. Most of my family, actually. But a couple had serious symptoms, but they recovered well. Most of them didn't have any serious symptoms.
You already mentioned the political circumstances when the pandemic hit. So could you explain a bit more of what was happening in Chile and why was it happening?
Okay, so I will go back to the beginning, which was around October 2019. Mm. There had been protests the whole year, and because of the government mostly not listening to the citizens and just not knowing what was life like for most of the people. Like, most of the people in the government come from rich families or are millionaires or billionaires. And people could notice the government officials constantly made comments that showed they had no idea how people lived. I know, for example, there was the housing minister who said that most of the people had a second home, which is absolutely not true. There was a transport minister who, because of the price hikes of public transport, said that people should get up earlier because between 7 and 8 a.m. the public transportation was cheaper. He said, like, well, the people should get up earlier, the problem solved. And a lot of things like that. So at the end of October or at the middle of October, the government raised the price of public transportation, which was not a lot, like less than 0.05 euros. It was not a lot, but people didn't take it well. And so high school students took to the streets and they started jumping the barriers to enter the subway every day. So they sent messages through social networks that said, like, at 5 p.m. we'll jump all the fences at all the subway stations. And the government didn't react well. And so most of the days they just sent the police, which gassed the subway stations with other people, like old people and children inside, with absolutely no regard for anything. And the government closed the subway like at around 6 p.m., which was before most people went back to their homes from their jobs. And so that left almost the entire population of Santiago with no possibility of returning home. Like, people had to walk 3 or 4 hours to get to their homes. And so people were really pissed off. And in most neighborhoods at the outside of Santiago, when the people got to their homes, they started protesting, like, around the municipalities or around metro stations. And so that was the moment where everything exploded. There were huge protests. There were, five subway stations which were burnt down. And people still don't know who did it. And, yeah, people started up barricades at the street. I went to a protest near my place, and we also barricaded the street. And, like, everyone was joining up. Like, even people who you never saw at protests were joining and expressing their anger at the government. And the ugly part of that is that there was some looting, and the government the next day sent the military to the streets and enacted martial law. You saw tanks, you saw helicopters over flying the city. It was surreal. Like, I never thought I would see a bunch of army men at the subway, which is one block away from my apartment. Like, and they were there, like, looking at people, very threatening. So it was a really intense time. And from then on, people started protesting almost every day. And most people started huge protests at the center of Santiago. And during that week, between Friday 18th of October and Friday 25th, there were big protests, and a lot of people got hurt and a few even killed by the police or the military. The amount of people that got together at the center of the city was the biggest that we had ever seen. Like, there were, from some accounts, more than 1.5 million in Santiago, which has like 6 million. So it was 25% of the whole city. Wow. Meeting at the center. It was It was incredible. I've never seen that. I felt that we were so powerful at the moment. But there was a lot of uncertainty because the government didn't want to listen to the people and just sent more and more police to the streets. So that continued for about a month. And the violence was escalating. Like, even as the police got more and more violent, and in some cities, the protests started getting more violent. People started burning down police houses and even tried to burn down a couple of military regiments.
Wow.
So that kept going until the 19th of November, in which the political parties agreed that the way to stop the violence was to draft a new constitution. Mm-hmm. Like, what that was what most people were asking for. Like, okay, let's do this. Let's create a new constitution.
I think we have to share here with people who don't know much about Chilean history, where did the former constitution come from?
Okay. So Chile was under a dictatorship, a right-wing dictatorship, between 1973 and 1989. And the military junta drafted a constitution in 1980. Mm. So when we got back to democracy in 1989, the center-left, which started governing between 1990 and 2010, tried to reform the constitution, but the right still had enough people at the parliament to stop any significant changes. And when Piñera, which is the right-wing current president, was first elected in 2010, he made some decisions that pushed people to also big protests. And when Piñera, he was reelected in 2018, he started a new government, and people were ready to oppose the government. They were expecting that the government would do terrible things, would privatize industries, would raise prices, would try to go back. So by 2019, everyone was incredibly angry, but there was no unity between the forces that opposed the president, and there was no huge political project. Like, people had been asking for a new constitution for more than 30 years, but most people thought that it was impossible because the right had enough people in the parliament to oppose it, and that the right would never allow it. But in November 2019, it came sort of out of nowhere. I remember it was a Thursday, I was watching the news, and people were expecting Piñera to send more military to the streets, to let the military enact another curfew. And we were really scared because we thought that even more people would die with the military on the streets. And that Thursday, I remember watching the news very nervously. The president was expected to give a press conference like at 8 o'clock. But he didn't show up. Then at 9 o'clock, didn't show up either. And then at 10. So we were waiting like, what is going on? And in the meantime, we started hearing like rumors that the parliament was meeting like privately to discuss the possibility of a new constitution. So that day at around 1 a.m. in the morning, there was an announcement from the president and from the parliament. They had reached an agreement to start a constitutional process, which meant that for most people, it meant that the legacy of the dictator, Pinochet, would be erased. And it was an incredible moment. The protests still continued until like, I know, January or February, in which they started like dying out or just diminishing in number. And then when the pandemic started, like it stopped altogether. But the agreement for the new constitutional process was that there would be a national poll to decide first if people wanted a new constitution. And a few months later, who was going to draft the new constitution? And for most of the pandemic, people were campaigning for the new constitution for the first month through social networks. And some people that had special permits could go out and start campaigning. And then in October, at the polls, the option to create a new constitution won by almost 80%.
Wow.
which was a huge defeat for the right. Like the right hoped that they would be able to have enough of a majority in the process to stop like the most relevant changes. And that 80% meant that there was a very low possibility of the right having veto power. And the elections for the people who were going to draft the constitution were yesterday. For the past, I know, 2 or 3 weeks, we've all been extremely nervous because no one knew what would happen. Everyone was really pessimistic, everyone in the center left, because if the right had veto power, like, we wouldn't be able to get any significant changes.
Yeah.
But the elections were yesterday, and the left crushed the right. Like, the right had got a little bit more than 20% of the places, and the center-left and independent politicians got almost 2/3, which meant that they can do huge reforms. And so everyone, like the right is really scared. They say that that means there will be socialism and Venezuela and Korea. Like, they're really exaggerating. But I'm really happy and really optimistic.
Now we are back in the presence, and I'm thinking of what is the current status of where does Chile stand at the moment with the pandemic?
Yeah, the numbers are going down. So some places have relaxed the restrictions, but where I am right now, there's still lockdown. The peak was at the start of April, and then it started going down. And so, yeah, we're still at a very high case count, but yeah, it's hopefully going down.
Well, that's a big learning, right? That's a big learning, that how fast things can turn upside down, no?
Yeah. And how little control we have. That's, I think, what has surprised me the most, that we as humans thought we ruled the earth, and this virus showed us that we don't, right? That we have exploited the earth for so long and with no respect, and that has led to greater and greater risks, like this pandemic, the climate change. So I hope we can learn the lesson and start living in a more sustainable way.
This was episode 6 of our 4th season of Record of Change, featuring Joaquin Vasquez from Santiago de Chile. If you like this episode or Record of Change in general, we would love to hear your feedback, and even more so if you would like to share it with your networks. Follow us on your favorite podcast provider, or on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or our website, recordofchange.com. This podcast is implemented with and by members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners. Thank you for listening.